share a beautiful idea. This week's parsha, we encounter the story of Yosef HaTzadik. Why is he called Yosef HaTzadik? Because he refuses to give in to the temptations of Eshet Potiphar, and he, true to his tradition, true to his boss, he does the right thing. He doesn't give in to her seduction. How does the Torah describe how he refused? So the Torah uses a very interesting phrase that only appears, if I'm correct, three times in the Torah, in Bereishis. The Torah says that Yosef vayima'in, and he refused to give in to her temptations. And not only does it vayima'in, but it's vayima'in with a sharsheret, which means vayima'in, gevalt. And the question is, what's the deal with the sharsheret? And the other question is, like, what gave him the strength to resist? How did he do it? So I think we're all familiar with the Midrash, right? The famous Midrash, which says that what did Yosef see that held him back from giving in to his temptations? He saw the Dmut Diokna of Yaakov Avinu. He saw his father's image. He saw a role model. He saw his Rebbe. And he said, I can't do that. Okay? And it's a beautiful, beautiful Midrash. But we can ask ourselves, well, where did that Midrash get that idea from? It's a really nice idea. It's inspiring. But, like, you know, did the rabbis just make that up? Or is it based on something? So just, I never made the connection until literally this morning when I was on the phone with one of my students, and it just clicked that actually it's perfect. Because where else in this week's Parsha have we encountered that phrase, Vayima'en, that comes up so rarely? Exactly. When Yaakov is mourning, right at Shlishi, right, it says, Vayima'en lanachamot, that the daughters of Yaakov wanted him to be consoled, wanted him to move on. And he refused to be consoled. Even though we know halachically after a year you're not supposed to be mourning, but Yaakov Avinu did not want to be consoled for the loss of Yosef. There's something holding him back. Right? The Midrash says that he knew deep inside that Yosef was not dead. And by mourning his loss, it would almost be like he'd be lying to himself. But to put it a little bit differently, Yaakov didn't want to feel disconnected from Yosef. He knew that as soon as he would mourn his son, then the relationship wouldn't be that same relationship. And he was like losing hope. But by refusing to mourn his son, a little bit Yaakov was saying, I want to hold on to that relationship. I don't want him to be gone. He didn't want that relationship to be severed. Yes? So isn't it perfect that when Yosef HaTzadik refused to be seduced by Eshet Potiphar, what's the word that's used? Vayima'en. Right? In other words, he didn't want to lose that relationship. He didn't want to lose that connection with who? With his father. Not with Yaakov Avinu. Because he knew that as soon as he was just another sinner, an Egyptian sinner that's having an affair, he's no longer the holy firstborn, you know, chosen son of Yaakov. He would lose that self-image, and he would lose his relationship to Yaakov Avinu. So the Midrash, when it's talking about the Dmut Yokno of Yaakov, it's not just making up. It's actually perfectly reading the Vayima'en connection and saying that Yaakov and Yosef didn't want to lose that connection. And Gevalt, it goes even further, because the sign that we said, what's it called? It's called a sharsheret, right? What's a sharsheret? Anybody know what a sharsheret means in Hebrew? A chain. So Gevalt, in other words, Yosef HaTzadik didn't want to lose that connection, that chain. Oh, the sharsheret?
Yeah, sharsheret.
Oh.
But you're right that the Kedushas leaving makes a connection to it.
Oh, okay, so I don't know what. If the Kedushas Levi said it, it must be based on something. All right, we have to look at the Kedushas Levi inside together. Give up. But Bechomiker, the idea is still strong, that Yaakov and Yosef felt that deep, deep connection, and they knew that, that sin would disconnect themselves from each other, and that's what kept them going. So two practical lessons to take away from this. One, that the importance of having role models, of having rebbes, of having, you know, someone who you really look up to, who you can put his picture on the wall. You know, for me, maybe it's Rav Shlomo Carlbach or and Rav Kook. For others, you'll find other rebbes. But that we all need people who are just on a different level. We just want to live like them. We just hear about them. We want to think like them. And perhaps more importantly, to having living role models. Right? You're in yeshiva this year, and it seems like, yeah, there's all these rabbis around. No big deal. I'll just find a rebbe. But the truth is, most guys don't really find a rebbe who they feel connected to, who they still are calling and still connected to after their year or two in Israel. Most guys lose that connection. So I don't know how to. I'm telling you guys that as a rabbi, we're really only here to keep the connection. We don't want to just come in, give a shiur, and then be out of your life. We really want to make a strong connection with you that lasts. So don't miss that opportunity. Make a rebbe that you really feel close to. That's they want. And not just a rebbe, you know, as a rabbi, but a good friend, a best friend, people in your lives who you're going to cling to, you're going to be connected to. And lesson number two, of course, is that it's the same thing with our relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. On a lower level, Yirat Shamayim means I'm scared of punishment, Yirat Onesh. But on a deeper level, on a Hasidic level, Yirat Shamayim means I'm scared of losing that relationship. That if I do this Avera, I do this sin, I won't feel as connected to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Of course, at the end of the day, I'm always connected to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, right? I'm always, you can't ever be severed from that, from Hashem. But if I do certain sins, then, and as Chassidus talks about it creates a blockage. And I won't be able to feel that relationship to the same extent. And so more than anything else, we should resist temptation because we want to have that strong connection between us and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Yeah, Adkan, we're good? We're good? Okay. So we have time for one more idea? Okay. So all that is good before I sin, right? Part one is be a Yosef Jew. Don't sin. You know, have role models. Resist temptation. But then part two is, but what happens once I've already sinned? Let's be realistic. We all give into our temptations. We all messed up. So luckily enough, in our parsha, we have a second idea. And what story is the model for what a person has to do once he's messed up?
Tshuva.
Exactly. But what story in this week's parsha?
Yehuda
and Tamar. Exactly. In fact, one of my students this week pointed out to me that it's funny that both David HaMelech and Yehuda do tshuva, but they only do tshuva after they get caught. And he asked me, like, what's the deal with that? Doesn't seem like, why is that such a good role model, you know? And I said, all right, maybe the whole idea is to teach it that even after you messed up, you still can do tshuva. That it's not just, you know, to fess up before you get caught, but even after you've gotten caught and like the whole world knows you messed up, there's still the ability to do tshuva. And to me, that's what the whole story of Yehuda and Tamar is about. Right? It's teaching us that Yehuda was embarrassed, he did a wrong thing, and Tamar presents him Hakerna, do you recognize this stick? Do you recognize this stamp? Chotamcha Tiocha, right? And what does Yehuda do at that moment when he's got the truth flashing before him? What does Yehuda do?
He admits he's wrong.
He says, Tzad Kamimani. And what does he get as soon as he admits he's wrong? He gets kingship. He gets Malchus. Because what's the stick and the staff a sign of? Who has a stick, a mate, and who has a stamp, a chotem, a tircha? That's a sign of a king. That's a sign of a melech. Right? A melech is exactly someone who's able to admit his sins. And that's why David HaMelech is the melech. Not because he's perfect, but because he's able to own up. Right? Like, I forgot the name, but you guys know the story of the guy who got the perfect game? Andres Galarragos,
or
almost perfect game, right? Yeah, the Gavaldigo story that he almost got a perfect game. It's very rare to get a perfect game, and really he did get a perfect game, but and the umpire blew it, and he called him safe when he was really out, and it could have been a tragedy, but the umpire, what's his name? Whatever. The umpire came right after the game, and he approached him, and he said, "Lo siento, I'm sorry, I messed up," and he was crying. And they hugged each other, and now I'm telling stories about them in yeshiva, so kavah. But the point is that he owned up, he said sorry, and everything was okay. And it's funny, because a lot of times we're trained, for some reason in the Western world, that sorry is like a bad word. Like, I don't want to have to say I'm sorry, because then I'm admitting I'm wrong. And the truth is, sorry is like the most important word you'll ever, and you're going to need it. Bezrat Hashem, you're all going to get married soon. And the main words you need in marriage are sorry and thank you. Everything else is just extra. But you need to know how to say sorry all the time, whether you did wrong or not wrong. It doesn't really matter. You need to master the skill of just saying, "I'm sorry, I feel your pain." And you need to almost make a game out of it. Like train yourself to love saying sorry, because it's just the most important thing in life to not be scared of saying sorry. If you're the type of guy that can say sorry and admit you're not perfect, you're a human being, or maybe you are perfect, but you feel someone else's pain, then you can be embraced by the world. But if you're too scared to admit you're wrong, then you're always going to feel that disconnect. So part one is don't mess up, Yosef. Part two is if you mess up, what do you got to do? Say sorry. Admit it. Okay. One last vort, because why not squeeze it in there? This is just pashut pshat in the Torah. Why did the brothers sell Yosef HaTzadik? I'm not talking about Hasidus. I'm not talking about all sorts of crazy thought processes. But at the end of the day, what was going on? Why didn't the brothers relate to Yosef like a brother? And I think the answer is very simple. He said, "Et achai anochi mevakesh." Yosef is looking for his brothers, but his brothers never refer to him as an ach. His brothers, in the beginning of the story, don't refer to him as an ach. What does the Torah says? He saw him merachok. The brothers saw him from afar. The brothers saw Yosef as an other. And this is the key to life, is to stop looking at each other as others, to stop being disconnected, like Rav Shlomo is always saying. Sometimes someone gives you a handshake and it's like just a piece of flesh. And sometimes you just want to tell the person, "Yeah, why are you so far? You know, why can't we just be connected? Why are we, what's the point? Why do we live in a world where people are so formal, so afraid to be connected, to give each other a hug and to really care about each other?" So Bezrat Hashem, I bless us all this week that we should mamish open up our hearts towards each other and not be far and really be close to each other, close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Have an amazing Shabbos Kodesh.